I'm Brian Scordato, and this is the Idea to Startup podcast brought to you by Tacklebox. We accelerate ideas into real companies through the Tacklebox membership, and we think through startup strategy every Wednesday on the Idea to Startup podcast. You're here because you're thinking about an idea, or you're ready to launch something, or you already launched something and you're running full steam ahead. We're here to help with the counterintuitive stuff. On to it. Today, we're talking about storytelling for your startup, what that actually means, how it actually helps, and whether or not you have to take creative writing classes or join an improv group just to sell B2B software. Spoiler, you don't, unless you want to. Let's get to it. As I've gotten older and wiser and crankier and better looking, my dials have started to get all jumbled up. Here is what I mean. I like to visualize my life as a giant switchboard with a bunch of dials that control the volume of everything in it. This governs what I pay attention to. For most of my life, most of my inputs had low volume most of the time. This created a baseline hum: work, family, friends, food, exercise. At any given time, one or two dials might have been ratcheted up because something urgent or new or difficult grabbed my attention. If it was 8 p.m. Tuesday night and I hadn't started the Wednesday pod yet, that dial would start blaring like a foghorn and drown everything else out until it was taken care of. But, as I said, for most of my life, this arrangement of dials getting turned up, me getting them under control, and them returning to the low hum was predictable and comfortable. And, most importantly, I mostly controlled the dials. If I wanted to eat better, I'd turn that dial up for a little while to focus on it and create new habits. And then life started breaking my dial system. I got married, got a dog, got a house, got a son, the business grew, and suddenly the dials are out of whack and driven by inputs that I don't control. Worst of all, a few dials seem to be perpetually blaring, namely Ruby and my son. Maybe one day I won't worry about the little guy 24 hours a day, but more seasoned parents have told me not to hold my breath. For example, yesterday I had to drop him off for his first day of, and I'm using air quotes so aggressively here I might tear a ligament in my index finger, school, and the blaring foghorn of me having to drop my 16-month off consumed everything else for a week, and as a result, I forgot to put shoes and socks on the little guy before walking out the door. I noticed my mistake as we were getting out of the car at school, but I didn't have enough time to go home. So I carried my barefoot son to his classroom and handed him off to a teacher who looked at me confused and asked, "Where are his shoes? You know he needs shoes, right?" Later that day, she left a message asking if someone else, perhaps my wife, would want to drop him off for the next week or two. The bigger point is that the new inputs and the sustained loud noise has drowned out a lot of stuff that used to be really important to me. Relationships with certain friends, waking up and writing for a few hours on Sunday morning, binging great TV shows when I find them, or wearing clothes that don't have infant snot stains on them, or sleeping past 5 a.m. There are a lot of things I used to love that I just don't get to do anymore. It's hard to not be unsettled by this, but as Brianna West says, your new life is going to cost you your old one. So my dials have changed and the inputs seem to be increasingly out of my control and I miss things I used to do and people I used to see, but the price of my new life is my old one and I'm happy to pay it. And now let's talk storytelling and your startup. And we'll start with why the heck I just told you that story. There are two reasons. First, because every customer you're ever going to try to sell anything to will have the same dial system that I have. You won't ever encounter a customer with a quiet mind just waiting to give you their full attention. You'll be pitching HR software to a guy who forgot to put shoes and socks on his kid that morning. Someone with a million responsibilities that are escalating and evolving, and you'll seem to him like, without exaggeration, the least important thing he's going to run into that month. But if you'd like your business to work, you'll have to somehow elbow your way to the front of that cognitive line. That means we need to give our customer an enormous amount of consideration and respect and meet them exactly where they are. We cannot ask for a single mental leap. We cannot create an iota of drag. This means brevity and clarity around your value. And the most efficient vehicle for your value is a story, because that's how humans best absorb new information. Although probably not the type of story you have in mind. I'm not expecting you to suddenly turn into Dan Brown and write the Da Vinci Code. A story, for our purposes, has a clear framework with a few inputs. We've got that framework for you today. The second reason I told you that story is to point out that you're still listening.
You could be doing anything else in the world, but you're listening to me tell a story about my barefoot son. Why? Because the story wasn't about me. Not really. It was about you. You probably weren't dumb enough to bring your son to preschool without shoes on, but you have been feeling pressure of more inputs and the pull of change recently because there's no one alive that hasn't. And since you're listening to this podcast, you probably notice that pull more acutely as you realize your startup will demand trade-offs. Adding something big requires removing something meaningful, a real part of your life, and that is scary. So that Brianna West quote at the apex of the story hit you just as hard as it hit me. Your new life is going to cost you your old one. You might have even paused the podcast to write that line down. A great story isn't about the person telling it. It's about the person reading or listening to it. That is how we need to craft our story, so that our customer sees themselves as the main character in that story immediately. Our framework will help you do that. If you keep those two things at the front of your mind, that your customer is endlessly busy and has absolutely no interest in you and owes you nothing, and that the only way to break through is to tell them a story that they are the main character of, you're going to be in good shape. Today, we're going to teach you how to tell stories about your customers so that your emails, your ads, your websites, and social posts break through the noise. And again, you don't need an ounce of storytelling skill for this. We don't expect you to turn into John Grisham and write the Pelican Brief. By the way, I'm going to hit all the best mid-90s procedural thriller authors before this pod is out. I'm talking James Patterson, I'm talking Lee Child, maybe even Michael Crichton. And there's another big one I can't remember that's on the tip of my tongue. I'll get it. Anyway, the framework we'll use is based on one of my favorite structures out there, mise en place. If you listen to the pod, you know I'm a wannabe chef and I love restaurants. And of course, we'll take our framework for a spin and do a bit of storytelling with a made-up startup at the end. Because why not? So let's help you become an effective, efficient storyteller with or without improv classes at the local Y. After, a little smooth jazz.
If you've got a startup idea and a full-time job and want to test out the former before you leave the latter, come and work with us. Apply at gettacklebox.com. Over 400 startups have tested and built ideas through our program, and those businesses are now collectively worth over $1 billion. Our program helps you prioritize and execute, and our members and me and the team keep you accountable and give you feedback along the way. Come build with us at gettacklebox.com. Back to it.
Three rules of good storytelling for entrepreneurs. A very reasonable question to ask is, why do entrepreneurs need to be storytellers? And the answer is that, when done right, it is the quickest way to get someone who doesn't know anything about your business to understand if it'll help them or not, to make a decision. Stories are how humans process, remember, and share information. Humans also have an inexhaustible desire to find and share shortcuts. And your business, at its core, is just a shortcut for your customer to get somewhere desirable. The best businesses are the shortcuts that help you skip the hardest part of whatever trail you're on. A story about a useful shortcut is as compelling a bit of information as we can create. It'll market your startup for you. So, your job as an entrepreneur is to help customers understand your shortcut as fast as possible so that they can decide if it's for them, and if it's not, who they should recommend it to. Which brings us to rule number one of good storytelling for entrepreneurs. This isn't about narrative or creative arcs or anything else you probably associate with storytelling. It is about speed. I've been doing this startup thing for a while now. I've helped over 1,000 startups through Tacklebox since 2015 and worked with hundreds of others outside the program. The successful companies aren't the ones with the best products. They are the ones that can get their idea across the fastest. People don't buy perfect things. They buy obvious things. Your enemy then, today, and for the rest of your life as a founder, is clutter, noise, ambiguity. Anything that complicates your message and requires your customer to think, or in the words of Donald Miller from Building a Story Brand, requires your customer to burn calories. I visualize every interaction with your customer in terms of thrust and drag. I first heard about this idea from Nathan Bechez. I'll pop his article in the show notes, but I've now adopted it as a scorekeeping tactic for marketing. When I review someone else's copy or website, I mark words, sentences, pictures with a plus one or a minus one. Everything is either moving the customer towards understanding your business or away from it. The goal isn't to reduce the minus ones, it's to produce something that doesn't have any. This is a fun game to play. Pop open a website and judge it. What on the site is a plus one and what is a minus one? I think that exercise alone would help like 95% of businesses sell more. Unfortunately, clarity is particularly hard for entrepreneurs. On the TackleBox application form, one of the first questions is some version of, in a sentence or two, tell us what you're working on. And I would say that roughly 80% of applicants start that section by saying some version of, well, there's no way I can describe this in a sentence or two, so, and then they write a dissertation on all the different paths they could potentially take with their idea. And that is why clarity is so difficult. How the heck are you supposed to project clarity when you aren't really even sure what you're doing? Especially if you're pre-product or very early and can still go a bunch of directions. That is where the second rule of good storytelling for entrepreneurs comes in. You don't matter. Only your customer does. So you don't have to project clarity in what you're going to build. You just need to project clarity on who the customer is and what problem they're facing. Make them feel like the story is about them. Hyper-specific language about the problem the customer is currently trying to navigate will grab attention. It'll put them in your story. This rule hits on the biggest misconception about storytelling for entrepreneurs. Most people assume storytelling means a story about them as founders, how they came up with the idea or why they're so passionate about it or why they won't be able to rest until it's solved. Unfortunately, no one gives a shit about this. Maybe investors, but it's still just because they're seeing you as an unpaid laborer working 100 hours a week, hopefully helping to make them rich. It's still about them, not you. Customers are just looking to see themselves in a problem they face to see if you might have a solution. Which leads us to the third rule. You have to earn a good story. Like everything in life, this takes practice and reps. And most importantly, those reps need to be in front of potential customers. You'll end up at the right story only after testing 20 bad stories. But the 21st or the 28th is going to land, and it won't just have a 2 or 3% increase in conversion over the other stories, it'll have a 300 or 3,000% increase. When you hit what we call story market fit, the results will be exponential. Hopefully, this takes a lot of pressure off your early attempts at storytelling. Early attempts are cheap. We'd love for them to work, but we can't be surprised or flustered when they don't. That's how it's supposed to work. This is going to take time. And now, let's talk mise en place. Mise en place is an idea developed by chefs that means everything in its place, and it is centered around preparation. If you've ever watched a chef cook at a restaurant, you've seen mise en place at work. Everything is prepped and measured and diced and accessible before the cooking starts. This allows the chef to focus on the important part of cooking, the method and sequence of combining those ingredients. Pulling this way of thinking into other areas of your life can be useful. It forces you to focus on your setup, identifying and prepping the quality ingredients you need to execute. If, say, you need to send 50 cold emails to try and get some customer interviews to learn more about your startup idea, you don't want to first find an email address for someone off LinkedIn, then figure out something to say to that person, then send the email, and then go back to square one and do it again. You want a mise en place approach where you prep the ingredients first. You find the 50 emails and make them easily accessible. You write and edit a few iterations of the copy. You draft calls to action and you build out the flow of what happens once people show interest. Then you execute with all your prepped ingredients at your fingertips. This can feel like you're adding steps, but prepping does two things. First, it makes it way more likely you're going to end up doing the hard thing. If you wake up at 6 a.m. and put on your shorts and running shoes, you've made it really likely you're going to go for a run. Prepping the ingredients does the same thing. And second, it helps you start building systems around those ingredients. You learn how to find 50 email addresses or find a way to get it off your plate entirely. You build structures for the messaging. You build automations for follow-up emails. And eventually, you can outsource your mise en place prep to your version of a sous chef, a virtual assistant or AI or a coworker or a hire. These systems then become your business. So let's identify and prep your story ingredients. The ingredients of a story. Our stories will have six ingredients. These can be combined to solve all sorts of marketing problems: cold emails, investor pitches, website copy, social ads, whatever you need. Here they are. First, who's it for? Who is the hero of our story? This is the specific customer we're trying to attract, and as always, this works best if you pick an actual person and build a message for them. Don't say that your hero is someone who's in their 30s who wants to change careers. Say that your hero is Frank, a guy you met who you think is a great representation of the type of person you'd like to help. The test then becomes, can we persuade Frank to take action? And are there other people who act like Frank and would react to the same story? We call this the A variable, or with our members, we say, who is your Frank? Second, what is the problem you're going to solve? What's the boulder in the road you're going to move for Frank? This is best expressed in problem language, and this is the hook. This is the thing that'll jump out and grab your customer's attention. By describing a hard, specific problem, you position yourself as the guide, the expert who knows how to navigate the sticky position your customer has found themselves in. This is the B variable, or the problem variable. And for the record, this is you and your business's role in the story. You aren't the main character, you are the guide, the expert who knows the shortcut well and can help the main character navigate it. Dumbledore, Gandalf, John Candy, and Home Alone. Third, what does success look like for Frank? What happens once the problem is solved? Where does your shortcut help your customer end up? This is the C variable, or the clear, wild success variable. Fourth, what painful near-term blocker do we remove immediately? This isn't the same as the big problem you're solving. This is the wedge, a piece of that problem that'll build momentum and help you look like an expert. This is the D variable, or the wedge variable. Fifth, how to get started. This is the call to action, and it needs to be completely in sync with your customer's existing momentum. If we nail the story, but then have Frank fill out a 3-hour questionnaire to start helping him understand careers, we're going to lose him. Way too many founders ignore this part of the story. This is the E variable, or the call to action. Sixth, the immediate risk. The first thing your customer thinks when they hear you tell the story. This is the, well, I can't do that because variable, or the F variable, the big risk. I think of these variables as the components of thrust, which, as I say it out loud, sounds like a racy pay-per-view movie that was poorly translated from Russian to English, but my point stands. Along with these 6 story variables, there are 3 accelerants, pieces you can add to each variable that'll dramatically increase conversion or thrust. First is specificity. This is always a driver of action. The more specific you can get about your customer, the more it feels like you're talking directly to them, and the more likely they'll trust you. Specificity creates thrust, ambiguity creates drag. As always, you're on the right path if it feels uncomfortable. It should feel like you're being way too specific to one customer. Specific, unique problems cut through noise like a butter knife. Second is urgency. You don't create urgency, you latch on to a customer's existing urgency. So this is more about describing the urgency the customer has and making sure you pick a Frank who's got urgency in the first place. Third are stakes. Similar to urgency, you cannot create stakes, but you can latch on to existing ones. Every good story has to establish stakes immediately. That is why so many movies and books start with a scene where someone gets murdered. It establishes that this is a story worthy of your attention. Your story flow will generally look something like this. Hey, customer A, you're facing B problem. It's keeping you from reaching C success. You're stuck on D variable and we can help. Get started here with E to solve D, and don't worry, you won't ever have to deal with F risk. Here's an example. You're a tall, lanky guy who can't find dress shirts and is keeping you from feeling confident at work. You've considered ordering custom shirts, but doesn't that involve a tailor in 2024? We're here to help. Put in your height, body type, and pick a few styles of shirts you like, and we'll email you a few options that'll fit. And we won't ever email you again after that unless you'd like us to. Specificity, urgency, and stakes are the multipliers. So you might add that they've got a wedding coming up, or they just got divorced and are starting to date again, or they've just got really long arms, but not a super long torso. You might also try different calls to action or a different wedge. The mise en place are the variables, the ingredients, and the tests start by picking the Frank, then testing out a bunch of iterations of the story to see what resonates the best, to get to story market fit. And now, let's tell a story for our fake startup. Airbnb interior design. Nearly 2 years ago, we pushed an idea in the pod that people seemed to love. It still comes up to this day, both from people who want to start the business and from Airbnb hosts who listen to the pod and wish it existed. The basic idea was that a bunch of Airbnbs use specific aesthetics to differentiate themselves and target customers. My wife and I stayed in an Airbnb in Nova Scotia that had impeccable style. And because the owner had been asked about the style frequently enough, she'd made her own Squarespace store, where everything in her house was shoppable. From the couch to the mattress to the coffee mugs, you could buy the exact version. She'd worked out an affiliate fee for most of these things. We wound up buying mugs and a pillow. Maybe a year ago, a listener named Jamie reached out saying she owned and operated 5 Airbnbs, each with a unique aesthetic, and that guests constantly asked her for the links to the stuff in the Airbnb. She'd made a list of everything in each apartment and kept it in her notes app and shared whenever people asked, though she hadn't set up affiliate links. Less frequently, but still once or twice a month, people asked her for specific style advice. Would she help them pick out furniture for their kitchen? Could she help them make their bathroom look like hers? She turned a few of those into informal interior design engagements, and she loved it. She wanted to do it more. So let's say you were interested in pursuing that idea, a way to help Airbnb owners with great aesthetics better monetize their spaces and themselves through shoppable links and an upsell to interior design services. Great. Let's test interest with a story before we build anything. Let's see if there's story market fit. For the A variable, our Frank, we'll just use Jamie. The question becomes, what's unique about her situation that we need to find a way to include? Our B variable, the problem, requires a little bit more help from Jamie. I emailed and we chatted about what the biggest blocker for her was, and there were a few. First, she didn't know how to set up affiliate links or make a website. Next, she wasn't sure if she actually qualified to be an interior designer, and what, if any, business setup was needed. When I asked why she hadn't done any of this, she said she was busy, but as I pushed a little harder, the deeper emotional problem came out. Sure, she said, I could set up an interior design business, but what if no one wants it? What if I'm no good at it? What if I'm only good at my style and can't match other people's? I'm not really sure I can do this. So we've got logistical and emotional blockers to work with. Often describing the emotional blocker and the problem helps your customer trust that you can help them navigate it. Our C variable is success. And again, I asked Jamie about this. The success date was clear. Her Airbnbs would become a feeder for her interior design business, which would become the bulk of her time and income. Easy peasy. For variable D, the immediate blocker, there were a few options. One was setting up the affiliate links to get that monetized fast. Another was a quick way for all her past guests to know that she had interior design services. For the call to action variable, variable E, one thing she kept saying was, if you just see my houses, you'll see how good I am at this. So the CTA could lean into that. Here is a stab for a website. Guests at your Airbnbs constantly ask for links to the glassware, the couch, the pillows. Some ask if you're available for hire as an interior designer and you've always wanted to give that a real shot. We'll help you convert your Airbnb guests into interior design customers, starting by building out a website full of shoppable links you'll get an affiliate fee on. Send us your listing and your email to get started. Now, I'd test for thrust and drag. I think there's decent specificity around customer, but the problem and blockers don't leap out to me. I'd want to get this in front of Jamie to see. The end. Montaigne. There's a set of essays written in the 1500s by Michael de Montaigne, and I don't know if I pronounced any of that right, that are somehow still relevant. People love them. There are quotes by famous writers that say things like, I read these essays written in the 1500s and they're not dated at all. They could have been written today about me. These essays are written in a way that makes it unbelievably easy to see yourself as the main character. That takes incredible talent. Montaigne is a generational storyteller. We have no interest in that, and you don't need to be that. Storytelling for your customer is much simpler. It's about specificity, speed, and clarity, and it doesn't take a ton of talent, it just takes observation. The framework we went through should help you get there. Tom Clancy, that was the one I couldn't remember. Pelican Brief, A Time to Kill. This was the Idea to Startup podcast brought to you by Tacklebox. If you got a startup idea and a full-time job, head to gettacklebox.com and apply. We'll get back to you in 72 hours and could be working together in 73. Have a great week.